Welcome to the Instructional Leadership Show. Justin Bader here from the Principal Center and the Instructional Leadership Association. Hope you're doing well today. Leave a comment and let me know that you're here. Just say hi in the comments and I'll keep an eye on those. Love to see people tuning in live because this is the live recording of our members only podcast. So you get a little bit of a behind the scenes look into producing the Instructional Leadership Show for our members of the Instructional Leadership Association. So thank you so much for being here. Please leave a comment to let me know that you are here, and we will kick things off with episode one, Go and See, Toyota's Lesson for Schools. There it is. All right, so this is the Instructional Leadership Show, and our focus on this show is helping you confidently get into classrooms every day, having feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discovering your best opportunities for school improvement. And those three things go together very well. I am a firm believer that getting into classrooms and having feedback conversations with teachers is the best way to change their practice and the best way to improve your school. And this is an idea that I have to give credit, I think, to Toyota for really helping me understand, like, why this matters, why this set of practices fits together so well, why they fit together to make a book that I think comes together very coherently as a plan for your instructional leadership. These three things fit together so well because they give you information that you need to do your job effectively. Now, speaking of what your job is, if you are joining us live, leave a comment here on Facebook and let me know, what is your role in education? What do you do? Let me know where you are, and let me know what the weather is like today where you are. I'm looking out the window and it is a beautiful sunny day. I think we're going to have a thunderstorm later, but it is gorgeous now. I think our temperature range is like 67 to 72, which is just incredible that it's going to be in such a nice range today. So let me know where you are joining us from and let me know what your role in education is. Once again, welcome if you are just joining us. Today's topic is Go and See, Toyota's Lesson for Schools. And I got this idea from a great book by Jeffrey Liker called The Toyota Way, 14 Management Principles from the World's Greatest Manufacturer. And Toyota is known as the world's leading auto manufacturer, you know, in terms of quality, in terms of profitability and sustainability. You know, Toyota has been a very, very steady company for a very long time by pursuing a very disciplined focus on quality. And Jeffrey Liker's book talks about the management, the kind of leadership that allows that sustained focus on quality. And it's very different in a lot of ways from what you might expect. It's very different from the ways that we typically approach things in education. Thanks so much, Sandy, for being here. Great to see you tuning in. How's the weather today in Chicago? Sometimes we get similar weather to Chicago. Sometimes Chicago gets a colder version of our weather, and sometimes you get it first and then we get it. So let me know how things are today in beautiful Chicago, and welcome, Sandy. Thanks so much for being here. And if you are lurking, please leave a comment. Let me know that you are tuning in, and I'd love to see your questions and comments as we go along. So this idea of a management philosophy that allows a sustained focus on excellence was very interesting to me, but it was a little tough to get my head around it because the idea of management, I think, has taken on a negative connotation, right? The idea that we should manage our schools has become subordinate to the idea that we should lead our schools, right? And like good leaders are leaders, bad principals are managers, right? Like that's the false dichotomy that's been set up. But reading The Toyota Way and learning about leadership at Toyota, I started to appreciate why management really is a key aspect of leadership. It's not the mundane. It's not the low importance, low priority stuff, you know, and it's not that leaders do the important things while managers merely maintain the status quo. Like I think that's a very bad misconception that we have in our profession. So I want to acknowledge the importance of management, but I also want to acknowledge what may be kind of the elephant in the room whenever we're thinking about learning from an organization like Toyota. And if you read the book, if you read The Toyota Way, you will appreciate that Toyota really is a learning organization in the way that we aspire to as schools. You know, I wish our schools were learning organizations to the same degree that Toyota is a learning organization. Like, if we can live up to that, we will be in terrific shape. But there's a discomfort that we naturally have when learning from an organization like Toyota, and that discomfort stems from the fact that schools are very different from factories, right? We really don't like thinking about what we do as in any way similar to what an auto manufacturer does, right? We are not in the business of making cars. We are not in an assembly line kind of industry. We're not doing assembly line kind of work with students. And the very idea is kind of offensive to us, right? Welcome, Becky from Arkansas Department of Education. Great to see you tuning in here right down the road in Little Rock. I'm right up the road in Heber Springs. And we're talking today about this idea of learning from Toyota and learning from how Toyota leads and manages in order to produce sustained quality. But of course, we know we're not producing widgets. We're not producing widgets with robots. You know, we're having human teachers, human educators work with human beings to develop them and educate them and help them grow. And of course, there are some big differences. So I would like to ask you to reflect on this. If you're joining us live, feel free to comment in the chat here. Leave me a comment so I can see that on Facebook. And if you're listening to the members only podcast version, hit reply. You've got an email about this in your inbox. Hit reply and let me know your thoughts on this. How are schools different from factories? And how are schools similar to factories? I think if we press ourselves to really think about some of the similarities, we do have a lot in common with factories. Even though the work we do is very different, the product is very different, the way that we produce the product is very different, and you know, even to the point that we're not even comfortable calling education a product or calling our students a product. I don't think we should treat our students as the product, but we do need to deliver whatever it is that we do with a high degree of quality. And one thing that you might be surprised about, if you start to read a lot of books about manufacturing, and I've probably read about 6 or 7 books on manufacturing specifically, because quality is a very big deal in manufacturing, and they've thought a lot about how to get quality in the long term, right? And I think about manufacturing, you know, my initial way of thinking about manufacturing was to just assume that manufacturing is about doing the same thing over and over again. You know, the machine runs and it stamps out a part and it goes in a box and that's the end of it. But reading about some of the nuances of leadership in manufacturing, I've learned that manufacturing is all about change. They are constantly having to make new things, having to incorporate new machines, new processes, redesign processes that are not producing results the way we want, redesign processes that are not working well for the humans that are involved in them. For example, I met somebody one time who was, his whole job was to redesign manufacturing processes in order to make them safer. You know, fewer repetitive motions, fewer repetitive stress injuries, that kind of thing. So I was impressed with the amount of learning and the amount of change and the human aspects that go into manufacturing. So, you know, I hope it's no surprise by this point that I reject that false dichotomy, right? That schools are one way and that factories are another way and we have nothing to learn from each other. We have a ton to learn, especially from Toyota. And one of the things that I think is most critical for us to learn, and I checked today, and it's actually the very first phrase in my book, is this idea, this management philosophy that Toyota has called Genshi Genbutsu. And I apologize if you are a native speaker of Japanese or if you have any kind of training in the Japanese language. I'm sure I'm saying that poorly. But the idea here is that leaders must go and see the work that's being done. Another translation of Genshi Genbutsu is go to the real place. And the real place they call the Gemba, the place where the work is being done. And when I read that idea in Jeffrey Leiker's book, The Toyota Way, this idea of the real place, I thought, we have that in education, right? We have that in our schools. We have a real place. And that real place is the classroom. We have classrooms where the real work of teaching and learning is being done. And whenever we think that the real work is being done in the principal's office, in the superintendent's office, in the school board office, We need to go back. We need to go back to the real place, the classroom where teaching and learning are taking place, and see and understand what's going on there. If we want to be effective leaders, if we want to be effective decision makers, if we want to drive improvement, we have to go to the real place and see what's being done. Now, of course, in Toyota, the real place is the factory floor, the assembly line. We're not going to assembly lines, we're going to classrooms, but in Toyota, they really, of course, do go down to the assembly line and see what's going on. So if there's a manufacturing problem, and again, leadership in manufacturing is all about dealing with problems and implementing change and raising quality. So there are constantly things to talk about and things to figure out. And leaders at Toyota have figured out that it doesn't work for just the leaders to put their heads together and talk about what to change and how to fix problems. No, if they are going to improve, if they're going to solve problems, they have to go and not only see the problems firsthand, but talk with the people who are doing the work. And I thought that's such a basic sign of respect for the work and a basic sign of respect for the people who are doing the work. How crazy would we have to be in our profession to not do the same thing and to not extend the same professional courtesy and not exercise the same degree of wisdom by talking with teachers? So this is at the heart of everything we teach in the Instructional Leadership Association, the idea that in order to improve, we have to talk with teachers about their work. We have to get into classrooms and see what's going on and have conversations about practice in order to bring about improvement. And that probably sounds a little bit obvious, right? Nothing about that is especially controversial, but what we tend to do in our profession actually is quite different from that and actually conflicts with that go and see philosophy. What we do too often in our profession is we go and fix. We go and figure out what's wrong, and then we tell people, here's what you need to do differently, without really taking that step of seeing, of paying attention, and of getting feedback, you know, having a conversation with the person who's doing the work about how to improve or how to fix the problems. So that's, I think, the basic that we need to understand. You know, the core thing that we need to understand is that when we're getting into classrooms and helping teachers solve their problems, you know, we're not there to solve the problem for them. And at Toyota, I found this very interesting. Managers actually consider it a form of theft for them to go and tell their employees what to do differently. They see that as stealing the employee's opportunity to think and to learn and to develop. And it's not quite a Socratic questioning method where it's like, guess what I'm thinking? But that conversation with the employee is designed to get the person who is doing the work to do the thinking about how to improve the work. And I think that is a lesson that we really need to take to heart. All too often, we try to do the thinking for teachers. We take notes, we provide feedback, we provide suggestions. We say, do this differently, do that differently. I'm gonna come back next week and make sure you did. Any questions? Okay. And the teacher, who is the one who should be doing the majority of the thinking and the talking in that conversation, is put into kind of a passive role of just smiling and nodding and agreeing and complying. And it shouldn't surprise us that that doesn't really bring about a ton of improvement. And I think the big step that we're skipping there is we're skipping what Stephen Covey in his legendary book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, called his fifth habit: seek first to understand and then to be understood. And of course, that happens on an interpersonal level, right? We have to understand other people, but we also have to understand the practice that we are seeking to improve. We cannot improve something if we don't first deeply understand it. And I'm convinced that often when we give feedback to teachers without really seeing, without really talking with them, we run the risk of sending teachers in the wrong direction with our feedback. One example that I've poked a little bit of fun at recently is this idea of higher order questioning, right? And I see a lot of teachers expressing frustration that they're going through their lesson, it's a very good lesson, and they ask some questions at a certain point in the lesson, and an administrator happens to come in at that point, or maybe an administrator was observing the whole lesson, and they notice that the questions are not higher order questions according to Webb's depth of knowledge or Bloom's taxonomy. So the teacher gets some sort of feedback from the administrator that says, hey, you know, you are asking lower level questions, you should ask higher level questions. And to me, that's a very clear sign that the administrator did not seek to truly understand the lesson and the role that those questions played in the lesson and the teacher's purpose in asking those lower order questions, because the feedback of, you know, just ask higher order questions is off base, right? Sometimes we should be asking higher order questions, but sometimes we should be asking lower order questions. And what it comes down to is your instructional purpose, your lesson plan, your intent for what you want to happen in the lesson as the teacher who's responsible for making that decision. So I don't believe that instructional leadership is all about second guessing. I believe it's about developing an understanding, developing shared expectations, and then helping people move toward those high expectations together through conversation, through different kinds of feedback conversations. So there are basically three different roles that we can play in a feedback conversation. And we have some articles on this. If you'd like to check this out, you can go to principalcenter.com/3roles, the number 3, R-O-L-E-S, principalcenter.com/3roles, and you can download a PDF of this article, 3 roles for changing teacher practice. And I believe that we need to play each of these roles at different times with different teachers. But I've noticed that I've got lots of books on the bookshelf behind me here, and a lot of the approaches that have been developed to helping teachers improve, to having feedback conversations with teachers, a lot of them are either focused on the boss role and focused on providing directive feedback, or focused on the coach role and on providing reflective feedback. And typically, books written for principals and assistant principals focus on the boss role, and books written for instructional coaches focus on the coach role in providing that reflective feedback. But I believe that we all need to play each of these roles. Sometimes, if you're an instructional coach, the best thing for you to do is to listen to the teacher and say, you know what, you're right. You need something different. You need a resource. You're doing the right thing, but it's the school that needs to change. So I'm gonna go talk to the principal and see if we can get that changed. I call that the leader role. And even if you are an instructional coach and you don't have leader in your title, you don't have an administrator in your title, if you're playing that leader role and saying, okay, here is what needs to change for this teacher to be successful, for this teacher to improve, that is instructional leadership, my friends, and that is what we need to be doing if that's what the teacher needs. And I call that reflexive feedback. Reflexive feedback is a two-way feedback conversation where we're giving the teacher ideas on what they can change, but we're also listening to what we might need to do differently, what we can do to support the teacher, or what might need to change in the school in order for the changes to be successful. Because teachers do not teach in a vacuum. Right? Teachers are operating within an organization that itself needs to learn and improve and adapt in order to set teachers up for success and set students up for success. So one example that I like to give about this leadership role and this reflexive feedback that we can have is around time. One of the things that we wanted our teachers to do when I was an elementary principal was work together, right? Collaborate, have a time every week where you sit down and you plan together and you look at student work together, and we wanted to do some PLC things and some data team things. And one of the things that teachers told me right away in those conversations was, you know, Justin, it's actually pretty hard because in every grade level in this school, there's one teacher who has a different prep time from everybody else. So we never have common planning time for our entire team. Two of us do, and we have some great collaboration, but the other person doesn't, and their schedule is just all over the place. And I looked at the schedule and I realized that they were right. And if I wanted teachers to be more collaborative, the action to take wasn't for the teachers to just be more collaborative. The appropriate next action to take was for me to change the schedule. And of course, it took a while to change the schedule. I think it was the following school year when we were able to create some common planning time by increasing the contract of our PE teacher and art teacher and librarian so that all teachers in the same grade level could have a common prep time. And there was nothing teachers could have done to make up for that, right? Like, that was my job as principal to create that common planning and collaboration time for them. So those three roles are going to show up in different conversations. Sometimes you'll play the boss and provide directive feedback. Sometimes you'll play the coach and provide reflective feedback, but also be open to the possibility of playing the leader and providing reflexive feedback, of having a two-way street, a two-way feedback conversation. Great question coming in the chat here. Becky says, it seems that factories consider products and can consider and control variables, whereas we work with people. How many variables can we control, right? That's a great question, because often we think we have less control, right? Because we work with people. I think the important thing to understand about factories is that they also have very little control over things like what materials they can work with, what suppliers they can work with. You know, from the individual manager and employee's perspective, those things are out of their control too. And I think about the things that are outside of my control as a principal. You know, if I'm coming into a school, I might get to hire a few teachers at the same time that I get hired, but most people are there already and they're going to continue to be there, and I don't get to choose who to work with, and I don't get to choose what skills they already have. Like their skills, their attitudes, their dispositions, who they are, what they're certified in, all of that is outside of my control, right? And, you know, how people behave, how students behave, the effort that students put forth is kind of outside of my control. But I think if we look at the school as a machine, not because it doesn't have people in it, not because it cranks out widgets, but if we look at the school as, you know, and if you prefer an organism, if you like an organic kind of metaphor, if we look at it as a machine or a creature or a, you know, maybe a cell that produces something. I love Peter Drucker's statement, Peter Drucker, the classic management thinker, who said, "Your system is perfectly designed to produce the results you're getting." Your system is perfectly designed to produce the results you're getting. And sometimes we try to get better results just by telling the people who work within that system that they need to give us better results. But often we're frustrated that that doesn't really work, right? We're frustrated that when we try to get people to do better, when we try to get people to do different things, it doesn't work. And that's because we're not actually changing the system. We're only changing what we're telling people. And if we have those conversations with teachers, if we go and see, if we go to the real place, talk with teachers about the work that they're doing and see and truly understand it, we can start to get a sense of why that particular part of the organization or why that particular person seems to be immune to change. There's a great book called Immunity to Change that's also good for helping have these conversations about change and about improvement. But what I think it comes down to is, you know, good old Covey's fifth habit: seek first to understand and then to be understood. So what this means for us as instructional leaders is we have to get into classrooms and we have to talk with teachers. And you know that my recommendation in the book and in everything that we teach in our programs is to get into classrooms 3 times a day and have a feedback conversation with the teacher after every visit. And this is a time of year, we're recording this in late April, at a time of year when principals are scrambling to finish final evaluations and to get those last formal observations done, to get the write-up done, to have the meetings, to get everybody to sign off on things, and to get that final evaluation rating and report written. And it's a time that it's tempting to slack off on the informal visits. So my message to you today is to keep them up. Don't let yourself fall victim to the pressure to let your informal visits go by the wayside when you're doing formal observations. Because when you do a formal observation, if that is not supplemented by informal visits to classrooms and lots of conversations with teachers, you're going to be like a horse with blinders on. Right? Like they put blinders on horses to keep the horse from getting distracted and from seeing things that are happening, you know, off to the side that might scare them and take them off course. And I think that our evaluation processes are kind of designed with that focus in mind, that we, you know, we have rules like, you know, only things that happen during the formal observation can go in the observation report, and then the final evaluation rating has to be justified by those formal observation reports. And we kind of intentionally put blinders on ourselves when it comes to the teacher evaluation process. And I understand the fairness aspect of that, like what's fair game and what can actually be documented. You know, those things do matter. But one of the big reasons that I want to encourage you to continue to visit classrooms every single day, even when you're doing formal observations and putting a lot of time into that, is that those informal visits give you context. Those conversations that you have with teachers clue you in on how the teacher's thinking, what they're working on, where they truly are with things, and they make it impossible for either one of you to bluff your way through the process. So if you have a teacher who you feel like is kind of putting on a show for you when you show up for that formal observation, getting into that classroom frequently, getting into every classroom frequently, and seeing what typical practice is like is going to give you much better context for properly understanding what you see in those formal observations. So that is what I have for you today. I hope that you are able to keep up the good work, getting into classrooms and having feedback conversations with teachers. Hit reply to your email. Let me know what you think about this. If you're listening to the audio, if you're listening on Facebook, you can email me, justin@principalcenter.com. I'll put that in the chat there in case we've not been in touch before. Feel free to reach out. If you would like to learn more about changing teacher practice and playing the three roles to provide directive, reflective, and reflexive feedback, you can learn more about our High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification Program at principalcenter.com/certification. You can also learn more in Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership, which I just found out last night is available on Audible. Now, the book has been out for a while now, and I recorded the audiobook late last year, and we've had it available to our members for the last couple of months, but just now it went live as an audiobook on audible.com and Amazon. If you are interested in getting it on Audible, you can go to principalcenter.com/audible. They'll give you a free trial, and I think Audible is like $15 a month. I'm not exactly sure, but I've been a member for many, many years and love Audible. So if you want to get the book there, feel free. If you are a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, you don't need to do that. I've already put the audiobook MP3 files with a player and everything in our Instructional Leadership Association members area. So if you don't have access to that and you are a member, just let me know. We can set you up with that and send you to the right place. And you should actually have an email in your inbox today with a link to that. So feel free to check out the audiobook either in the members area or on Amazon or Audible. If you are not a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, you can learn more about that and get on the waiting list for next time we open registration at principalcenter.com/join. And that is it for today. Thank you so much, everyone who tuned in live. We do this every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Central on Facebook. This is the Instructional Leadership Show. And if you are a member, we will send you the MP3. We will post a transcript as well as the slides from this episode. And I will see you next time. Thanks so much for tuning in.